I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
A missing person is a person who has vanished and is unconfirmed as alive or dead, as their location and fate are unknown.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Down the Rabbit Holes podcast. I'm Melissa.
And I'm Amy. And Melissa and I were just talking about all our end of the year plans and the beginning of the year plans. And we've got a lot of stuff packed in for you guys. I mean, it might not feel that way for you guys, but we're really like trying to make our episodes full of just really great content. We're getting psyched about it. Yes. Because it's just a lot coming our way.
So I guess this is the right place to say, welcome to your last episode of 2020.
Is that what we're saying today? We can say that?
This will be the last full regular episode of 2020.
So this is probably the first thing that has gotten me thinking about 2020 really coming, honestly, because you guys have to remember this is...
You mean 2021?
Sorry, 2021. But this is like... as we're recording, the beginning-ish of December. So I'm still in, let me clean up after Thanksgiving and let me get ready for Christmas. And now here we are hopping to the new year. This is nuts.
Right?
Let's just hope that next year is far better than this one. Although someone taught me something really important to remember going forward. I had a few friends that had some really great life changes this year. And they had said to me, you know, it really hurts my feelings when people say 2020 is like the worst year ever. And yeah, there are a lot of terrible things that happened, and I'm not discounting that. But I could see why when people have these amazing things happen and everyone's like, this is such a crap year, it makes them feel bad. So I don't want to discount anyone who had some wonderful things happen this year, and I hope they continue to next year.
Yes, all of that. I just want to take a minute and say thank you for all of you that listened this year and joined Patreon and emailed us and social media us and all of those things. We are so excited, like Amy said, what we have planned coming the end of this year. And just because this is your last full-length episode on your regular feed doesn't mean you're not getting more content. Just put that out there. But there's tons more on Patreon too. But we're just so appreciative and we're so ready to kick off 2021 and start doing more things.
Exactly.
I'm so excited about your case.
I'm very excited to do this case. What excites me most, honestly, is that so many people requested it. And that just means that we're making a connection with you guys. And that's probably my favorite part about doing a case request. So I just want to let y'all know that Wendy, Mindy, and Christina were some of the people that emailed us and asked us to please do this case. So that's super exciting. When I looked into this case, I actually remembered hearing about it, but I never looked into it, as many of the cases we do, you know, when we reflect on them, we're like, yeah, we've heard about it, but we never looked into it. This is our, like, go pass to go all out and do it. And a couple of interesting things happened when I looked into it. First of all, there are probably a lot of articles in comparison to some of the other cases that we do. So it was like not a, a difficult person to find information on. What I did find, though, was that the majority of the articles and or podcasts or YouTube channels that cover this case had in common was that they told pretty much, which is awesome, the exact same story, which means I didn't have to go looking for 10 other articles to make sure and fact check, right? But what I discovered was that there were certain details that were more difficult for me to find out. And they're my typical go-to details. Like when I tell my story, I like to tell people a little bit about the background of a person because to me, that's making a connection. It's like, wow, that person is exactly who I am or not. And something like this could happen to me. I think it really makes you realize it's a human being. And if they're like you, that this stuff happens to everybody, or it could happen to everybody, excuse me. But when I went to my go-to, the Charlie Project, I couldn't even find the birth date of this girl. So that's one example. So there was that. But I did come across an article in the New Yorker, which I thought did just a beautiful job of capturing a little bit of the background, the whole backstory up until present day. And initially when I started to do this, I was in like a mental competition of trying to write this eloquent story about this young lady. And then I was like, Amy, stop it. You're not a journalist or anything like that. So you don't need to be in competition. Write your own story. So my approach came to be that I'm going to give you the highlights as I usually do. And I'm not trying to be a journalist. But I will say, if you want to really look into this case, this is an excellent first place to start. There's a lot of detail and a lot of things to sift through, and I think it's worth every minute of your time. So shout out to the New Yorker for the way that they captured this case. So are you ready to hear who I'm going to talk about?
I'm so excited to hear about it.
Awesome. So it's a little confusing, but I'm going to tell you the story of Hannah Upp.
And I'm even more excited because I only know the name because it comes up in our emails often. I don't know anything about the case.
Well, that's good. Are you sitting in a secure chair because you might fall out of it?
Oh, good. Do I need like a seatbelt? I don't think I have one on my desk chair.
Just make sure you're stable.
So okay, I'm good.
What little I know about Hannah Upp's background is that she was born in Oregon. And she had a mother and a father. I don't know about any siblings, but her parents were Methodist ministers. And I don't know if they moved around a lot, but I do know that in her parents' history that they taught or spoke in various places. So at bare minimum, they at least traveled a lot.
Okay.
I don't know about Hannah's education or her hobbies or if she was involved in sports or anything like that. But what I have gathered and what I've read is that Hannah was at least into swimming. She sounds very outdoorsy and probably kind of up and willing to try or learn anything. She eventually went off to college and she ended up becoming a teacher. Sounds like something that she wanted to do and kind of knows that she wanted to do. And by the time she finished college, she was ready to go. So in 2008, Hannah was 23 years old, and she was working in New York as a teacher. She's described as extroverted. She's the life of the party. Literally, in an article I read, I'm quoting, she lit up a room for you, Melissa. But I think that that's something that can be said about extroverts, because they have such a personality that takes up space in a room, people are attracted to it. It is a light. Absolutely, quite literally. She was everyone's best friend. So what I take from that is that she treated everyone as valuable and close to her. I've met a few people like this in my life, and they just don't put one person on a pedestal and one person on a lower platform. They just treat everyone kind of the same. So the month was September, and school was about to start in New York City. And Hannah gets dressed, and she heads out for a run. When school started, like when the teachers are going back and everything, Hannah doesn't show up. And this alarms
some
people.
I'm sorry, was this days or was it like hours the same day?
It sounds like she didn't show
up. Like she goes out for a run before school?
People probably waited, still didn't show up. And I imagine, and this is just what I kind of believe would have happened if I were in this position of being at work and someone doesn't show up for work, is at the end of the school day, you go and kind of investigate, right?
That makes sense. Okay.
So her friends, colleagues, they start to search for Hannah. And they were confused because when they went to search her apartment, everything was found there, like her purse, her wallet, her belongings, any money. It was all still there. Roughly 2 weeks later, someone who knew Hannah, or at least was kind of an acquaintance, spots her at the Apple store. And I want to make it clear that this is like the phone store, because the first several times I heard this, I was like literally thinking she was an Apple
store. Amy.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. I love you.
Thank you. So she's...
Amy just ranted for 5 minutes at the beginning of this phone call about how much she hates technology. So that actually doesn't surprise me at all.
Fair enough. So when she's seen at the Apple store, Hannah's in running attire, and this person actually approaches her, which is great, right? Oftentimes mm-hmm. we hear about people, they're like, I recognized her, I thought it was her or him, and I never did anything about it until later.
Right.
And they're like, Hannah, you're missing. And this person, Hannah, it seems, responds, I'm not Hannah. And that was that. So this sighting was reported to police, and she was in fact identified on camera as at the Apple store, just as it was told that this person walked up to her. And she was also spotted logging into her email before leaving.
Wait, so it was her?
Yes.
Okay.
So roughly that same week, I believe it was a matter of a few simple days, Hannah is spotted again at Starbucks. And this isn't like in Ohio or anything. This is still within New York City. So she's kind of in the same area.
I'm confused.
Well, you should be. But nothing really comes of that. It's just kind of confirmed that that was her at Starbucks. So nearly a month later, actually, I believe it's 20 days later, on September 16th, Hannah's body was seen face down in the harbor. If I remember correctly, it was actually seen by the captain of the ferry doing a typical run. And when they saw the body, they approached it. And I'm sure they thought they were going to either identify, or I don't know if they thought they were going to pick up the dead body. I don't know how you would accomplish that on a ferry without traumatizing passengers, but that's what it sounds like. So they approach.
Wait, hold on, hold on, hold on. I thought this is a regular episode, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Trust me, I know what I'm doing.
I know. That's why I'm going to let you keep going.
So they approach Hannah, and like I said, her body is face down in the water, and they retrieve her body, and they, in essence, flip her over, fully expecting she's dead. She gasps for air, and
what?
Then she starts sobbing, crying, and Hannah was taken immediately to the hospital. At the hospital, she's examined. Now, when she comes in, she is badly sunburned. She's very dehydrated. And she is lucid. She knows who she is and everything like that. But what's interesting is it appears as though she thinks she's only been gone for like a few minutes. Like, I went out for a run and what am I doing here kind of thing.
But how many days had actually
20
passed?
Days. And okay. She's still in running attire and everything. So obviously they're examining her. What happened to this girl in 20 days? And they could not find anything neurologically wrong with her. Nothing physically was going on. And at the end of the day, all they could do was diagnose her with something called dissociative fugue. Now, I'm sure, well, I don't want to be arrogant or anything in thinking that people asked for this episode maybe because there would be like a mental health piece to it. But if so, unfortunately, this is not my expertise at all, so I can't lend that much information. Part of that is because it's just the way my life landed. But part of it is that dissociative fugue is very, very rare. And there's very little information on it. When I was listening to, I believe it was a news clip, it was compared to like a Jason Bourne diagnosis. Now, if any of you have seen any action movies, you must have seen The Bourne Identity and the trilogy, right? You have not.
I don't watch movies. Sorry. Anthony is going to, when he hears this, is going to be like, see, I told you you should
watch
it.
Didn't he try
me.
And get you to watch The Matrix once?
Probably. Anthony has seen every movie ever created.
All right. Do you want to bring him in as a guest host? I'm kidding. But anyway, so in essence, if you have not seen The Bourne Identity or any of the Bourne movies, which is based on, I believe, a book, Jason Bourne basically wakes up and he doesn't know what's happened. He comes to basically deduce that he's like a rogue spy. He is on the run from something, but he has all these skills which lead him to believe that before he woke up, he was probably a spy and has no memory of it. So he's on the hunt to figure out what happened to him and why people are after him. So that's extreme, but I think that people can kind of understand a little bit about what this diagnosis means, is that you can lose these fragments of time and you're basically losing all the information that is associated with it. So she remembers when she woke up and wanted to go for a run. And then she wakes up after being rescued from the water, and there's no time in her present mind that has been lost. But 20 days realistically happened, right?
Yeah, I'm just super confused. Like, how do that work?
What we do think we know about dissociative fugue is in most cases, it is often brought on by a traumatic event. However, Hannah states, as well as her parents, that nothing traumatic has ever happened to her. So it doesn't fit. But, you know, at the end of the day, it is what it is. And Hannah's healthy and able to go home. And she just goes on with her life. Without going into too much detail, there is a couple of good paragraphs in the New Yorker article about the reasoning for investigating that further, but I won't go into that. You can definitely read up on that if you want to.
Okay, so she's now in the hospital.
She's in the hospital. These tests come up with nothing, so they diagnose her with dissociative fugue, which kind of is, we've exhausted every other thing that we can think of, and this is what we think it is.
And can I ask a question? I'm sorry if this is, like, too far in, but how is it not just memory loss? Like, what's the difference? Do you know?
Because she can't remember those she doesn't just lose her whole life. She only loses that period of time in which the fugue happens, right? You have amnesia, typical movie amnesia, and you can't remember who you are. You can't remember your previous life. This girl's like, I know I'm Hannah. I know I'm a teacher. I know I'm supposed to be at work. I have to get to my kids. Like, nothing else is different for her.
Okay, I'm with you.
So she goes on with her life. Everything seems great. So Hannah actually ends up moving to Maryland, and she picks up another teaching job there. I couldn't tell you if the teaching job brought her to Maryland or if she went to Maryland and then came upon the teaching job. I don't think it matters, but anyway, she gets a teaching job. So again, September rolls around, and this time it's 2012. So a little bit of time has passed. Roughly, I think, 4 years.
Yeah. Okay.
Hannah's mother receives a call. Hannah's stuff was found on a trail. They looked everywhere for Hannah. They could not find her. And 2 days later, it seems as if Hannah comes to from whatever she's going through. And she was in a creek. And as soon as she could, she gets to a phone and she calls her mother. And she's like, "This is Hannah. I'm here. I'm okay," kind of thing. So in essence, it happens again. The first time, I don't have a whole lot of questions.
In the same, like, month of the year, right? Like, I feel like it's always leading up to school.
Absolutely. Which we can talk more about in a little bit.
Okay.
So, at this point, I personally have a lot of questions because the first time, you don't really know what you're dealing with. It's more than an anomaly the second time. Something's going on. I just have so many questions about that period of time and what they did with the information that they had. But for whatever reason, they decided, you know, to just keep trucking along, moving with life, right?
What?
Yes. So, you know, I want to say that Hannah's hopping around teaching is what I've come to think of as a real strength of hers. She has a lot of stuff to offer. I think that she was wanted wherever she wanted to apply. I don't know if she just wanted to travel. The other possibility is there are articles that state that she was incredibly embarrassed at what happened to her and the publicity that it brought to her. So I don't know if her moves also were prompted by that, but you know, I just want to say that she was a gifted teacher and there's no evidence to support that this impacted her job or her career or even the people that entrusted their children to her, you know?
Yeah, no, I hear you.
They seem like two totally different things. So in 2013 or 2014, I'm a little unclear, Hannah got a job at a Montessori school in the Virgin Islands. Talk about dream job, right?
Except for, is her family, like, terrified that she's now that far away? I know it's, like, the United States or Virgin Islands, but, like, she's now that far with this potential mental disorder or whatever it is. I don't even know what it's classified as.
So, the New Yorker states that her mother was a little bit concerned and had either mentioned or stated, and I think that she was exaggerating. I don't think she meant this at all in this way, but she was like, "Can we put a tracking device or something on Hannah?" And, you know, Hannah didn't want anything like that. And her mom was like, "Well, you know, I have to respect you. You're a grown woman, and I'm going to let you live your life. Like, I'm certainly not going to track you like you're a child or a prisoner." So yes, this wasn't without
concern. But it's not about being a child or a prisoner. It's safety. But go ahead. I'm sorry. Keep going.
But I also think it's like, she's an adult woman and she's told me no. And her diagnosis doesn't warrant her being impaired in the moment, right? Like if she went to court in that moment, she would be probably found sound. Right?
Okay.
You know, so I think that there's that piece. I think she wanted to respect her daughter. And maybe there's a touch of powerlessness. I'm not really sure. So Hannah's in the Virgin Islands. She finds a really great place to live. She's teaching at a Montessori school. She was really valued at the school. I believe that educators would use her to kind of show off the school and make it an appealing experience for anyone touring the school. The kids loved her. She just was amazing. And she seemed to be doing amazing. Although this stuff happened to her, she remained her same extroverted self. She was social and great to be around and all the great things, right?
Right.
So September of 2017 rolls around. And
here we go with September again.
Here we are again in September, yes. And Hurricane Irma is scheduled to hit the islands. Now, if you remember this, you can think back. They were supposed to have consecutive hurricanes that year. And I remember watching some YouTube footage of news reports about this because it was so intense, and I didn't know what the residents would or could do, honestly. So I was very into this and keeping up with it. And it actually seemed like last summer, but no, this is 2017. So Hurricane Irma is scheduled to hit. Everyone prepares. And, of course, destruction, damage, whatever. And luckily, at least for Hannah, she's okay. A couple days later, to a week later, Hurricane Maria follows Hurricane Irma and more destruction. And this time, Hannah is nowhere to be found. They were able to determine that her vehicle was parked down by her favorite beach, Sapphire Beach, and her belongings were all inside. Aside from that, there's no trace of her. Her friends and loved ones all searched the water, because if you're noticing any trends other than September, is she's usually found by water. But they have not found her or any sign of her. And at this point, they are hoping that she's just going to come out of a fugue or something like that and return. But this, at this point, will be the longest she's been gone. And that's it.
Well, I don't like that at all.
No, and there are some theories, although there's one obvious one. It's that she is experiencing another dissociative fugue, and she's wandering around somewhere. However, I think that most people's first thoughts are, well, she's on an island. There's, you know, only so many places you can go, so obviously someone's going to come across her at some point, right?
Except for there's so much water.
Which might bring us to another theory, but that first one, at least in terms of her being on the island, walking around without a mind of who she is or whatever, doesn't seem all that likely to me. Someone would have come across her, I think. Which brings us to another theory that also does involve the dissociative fugue, but it requires her to leave the island. So people did leave the islands after or during this destruction in order to evacuate. And they went to places like, I think, Miami, Puerto Rico, and other nearby islands that weren't going to be impacted or as impacted by the hurricanes. So they do wonder if in a fugue she hopped on a boat and she, in essence, is still in the fugue but somewhere else off the island.
I mean, she would have had to be in it when she left then.
Well, not necessarily. I mean,
I don't think she would have left to evacuate if she was not in a fugue and not told her mom.
Well, right. It seems as though responsibly you would have at least told someone you were leaving. But there is an off chance that in a panic you could have just hopped onto a boat and left and then went into a fugue, because maybe she's... Or these fugues are brought on by stress. The stress of a school year starting, for example.
Okay.
And this is the stress of a really destructive storm. So that's a possibility. Another possibility is she left her life. Maybe she attempted several times unsuccessfully and finally she got it right.
Yeah, I mean, that's... Okay, keep going.
For me, I think sex trafficking is on the table. Although she was about 32, which would be outside of the statistics a little bit, I don't think you can write it off completely. I mean, there could be foul play. That's always an option, but there's no evidence for that. And those are the most prevalent theories, in my opinion. So if you want to start off with...
Wait, did you say there's a theory that she's drowned?
Well, not directly, no. I guess I was kind of encompassing that indirectly. So that is a theory for sure that she drowned in a dissociative state, maybe, or maybe without. She was a strong swimmer. So I don't know. Even strong swimmers drown. So it's hard for me to say anything like maybe that's unlikely. Anybody can drown. That's fact. Don't fight nature.
Right.
So, I mean, if you want to run with that for a moment, you know, maybe she goes down to the beach. She's going to either take a run or go for a swim. And whether she's in a dissociative state or not, she's experiencing maybe strong winds or a lot of currents from the storm.
I was going to say that's totally possible with the storm coming or just having passed because she was seen after the first storm, but not the second, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's, to me, a pretty valid theory.
Yeah, it really is. She's unfamiliar with the area. The sea can look quite calm when things are stirring underneath the surface. So, yeah, that's a good theory.
All right. So, I mean, I think it's just as viable that she did go. I mean, she's ended up in water all the other times she went into a fugue. So is it possible that she went into the water and drowned?
I mean, it is. There were a lot of most of her belongings were in her car, but they found some clothing of hers near the beach, not directly on the beach, that had her dress, sandals and keys. But you could have taken them off to go for a run, or you could have taken them off to go swimming. Either way, I think it's a little bit difficult to figure out.
Okay. So I guess my question is, what do you think?
That's a good question, Melissa. So when I struggle, I usually try to go backwards and just cross out the ones I really don't think that happened. So I don't think that she hopped on a boat and left the island.
I agree with that.
I don't know about sex trafficking. In a chaotic environment, when a storm has just happened, I would think that would be prime time for sex traffickers to be picking up on trying to take women when people don't know where others are, you know? Yeah, I mean, she's outside of the typical age range. However, I can't write it off completely, but I can say maybe it's a little bit less likely.
Okay. How long, do we know how long, like, a fugue can last?
I don't think that there's any record of people going more than 4 years.
But just because there's no record doesn't mean it doesn't happen, if it's so
right,
rare.
Right, exactly.
So she really could still be in a fugue.
Yes, but then I struggle with, if I don't believe she left on a boat or other means, she's got to be either on the island, which means no one's seen her, which I find very hard to believe, or she drowned, or she met a sinister fate when she was running.
But if she left on a boat in a fugue and she's still in one, she could be anywhere.
That's true. I guess I'm under the impression that people would have seen her on a boat, but if everyone's panicking and everyone's stressed and worried, who's looking for a missing girl? Everyone's probably missing.
Right. Think of like 9/11.
Yeah.
Same idea.
Which I have to say that I prefer that theory, if you can prefer a theory, because that leads a lot of hope that she's out there somewhere.
What does her family or law enforcement think?
Well, I think that they think she could have left on a boat, but that also might just be, I want there to be hope that my daughter's going to just surface one day.
And do we know what happened the first two times she went into a fugue? Like, do we ever know what she did during those days?
No, not really. So we know, obviously, where there were sightings. We don't know how she ate. She didn't know how she ate and nourished herself. they do suspect that in terms of showering, she would stop into gyms and just take a shower and likely put on pretty much the same clothes she always had. But where she was, for example, going to the bathroom, eating, spending her time, we don't know. And the second time, it was only 2 days. So there's only so much that you can do. And realistically, you can survive not eating for 2 days.
And the fact that she was comfortable traveling, I mean, she went from, like, Oregon to New York to Baltimore to Virgin Islands. She wasn't someone that lived in the same town.
Correct. Yes. And that's why I didn't want to get into some of this stuff that's stated in the New Yorker, because I really found it difficult to find that hard line of when to keep going and when to stop. So they start talking about her past and growing up in a religious home and how some of the beliefs might have caused her stress, and maybe those stressful things impacted her later. And I have to cut myself off because I'll just go on a tangent about all of this. So I definitely think, again, you should read it. But other than what's been put out there by this article, there's nothing to lead me to believe that she had any trauma or, you know, deep stress going on in her life that would induce something like this.
I don't like any of this, okay? And I'm, like, stressing out because part of me is, like, this poor girl could be out there not knowing who she is, not knowing she needs help. But on the flip side, how has she not run into anyone that's been like, hey, you need to eat, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And acknowledge that. But then I say the same thing about Amy. We think Bryce LaPisa could be alive.
That's true. That's true.
You know, and that same idea, like, it was a mental thing, and, you know, but he's surviving somehow. So, I mean, it's totally possible. Do I think it's most likely? No.
See, if she had not had these two previous episodes, I think I'd easily land on she unfortunately drowned.
That's where I land.
Which I think is probably still the most probable thing that happened. She's swimming in the ocean after a hurricane. It looks calm on the surface, but it's probably not underneath. She's a strong swimmer, but she also was found face down in a harbor in New York. So the fugue does change a few things for me in that it gives me more reason to believe that it could be something else, but I still think most likely she's drowned.
I agree with you. I think that most likely she has drowned, unfortunately. But you're right. The fugue does give you that little bit of, like, well, she could be somewhere else. It's not like it's been 10 years. It's been three.
Yep. Yeah, but then I'm like, if you drown, it means no one saw you.
Right, because there were storms and no one was at
the beach.
I mean,
I get it. But then if a fugue hits you at the same time, you simultaneously go into a fugue and you drowned? What are the odds?
What? Who said she had to be in a fugue?
I know.
She could have just gone swimming and
but
drowned.
Then I'm like, what are the odds that you meet another terrible fate after two horrible things happen to you involving loss of time and memory?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, but I think it's completely plausible that she went into the ocean and drowned and then never, like, there's no way to find a body.
You know, if we don't believe that and we think she experienced a fugue and she took off her clothes and she's either best case scenario wearing a bathing suit or worst case scenario in a bra and underwear or something less, she's...
Yeah, but she's not for 4 years, Amy.
Understandably, I mean, 3 years. You can get clothes by then. But if she's roaming around in a fugue for several hours soaked from the ocean into
in
the
a bathing
evening,
suit,
even.
Why is that weird? She's on an island.
Yeah, I guess. But, yeah. Yeah, it's not like it's September and it's 30 degrees and you're in a bathing suit and it would look weird. If it was 7 o'clock at night, people would not think that's weird or notable. Yeah.
Right, like it's Tropical Island. People are in their bathing suits all the time, especially tourists where she's, you know, technically on paper a tourist. I know she lives there now, but
yeah,
it's totally possible that she's... But what happens after a few days? You know, like, then what? I guess the first one lasted 20 days. Where did she go? Did she go back to her apartment? We don't know. I don't know. I don't like this.
I mean, it's doubtful. She left without anything.
I think for me, and, like, this is not the right way to approach a case at all, but, like, a drowning ties up the most logical loose ends. And because it's tough to wrap my head around this fugue... And, like, what happens then?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah. Well, if you're asking me to lay them out in numbers, I guess, I would say number one probable fate for Hannah was drowning. Number two is that she went into a fugue and left the island. I don't necessarily think she met foul play. I, for once, don't believe it was sex trafficking.
I agree with you on both those accounts. I think it's most likely that she did, unfortunately, meet a fate of drowning. But I would say second, and I don't mean, like, 90-10. I mean, like, 60-40, yeah. That she could have been in, she still could be, yeah, in a fugue. This one's a tough one.
Yeah, I mean, none of them fit right. Because I think I don't want it to be drowning. I'm like, girl, you went through... a lot. And you were face down in a harbor and survived. And you go for a swim and that's how this has to end? That's awful.
Right. I agree with you. And I want for her family and not to be like that too. But unfortunately, that's sort of where I fall.
Yes. Hey, we kind of agree.
We kind of do.
Well, what do you guys think? Especially Wendy, Mindy, Christine.
Yeah.
You must have opinions. What didn't we think of? I have to know.
Yeah, I want to know what everyone thinks.
So reach out to us.
And I obviously, we always share pictures on our social media of the missing person. But, like, I feel like in cases where it's likely they're still alive... their picture needs to be everywhere.
Oh, I mean, for sure. It's so hard because I live in this bubble where I love true crime. And in the true crime community, everybody knows all these cases. Because what do? We sit there and look into them all. And we're up till 3 in the morning where other people are on their TikToks looking at these cases.
We do both.
And... we really are a special little group of people, and a lot of people have no interest in true crime or abductions or sex trafficking or anything like that. And I bet if we went up to a stranger on the street and I pick up a case that I think is pretty mainstream, but probably not to the outsiders, like Maura Murray, and they probably don't even know the name. And we sit here think everybody knows Maura Murray.
Yeah, I mean, I had the same conversation with, like, if anyone says, oh, I listen to true crime, I like true crime, blah, 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 blah. My first go-to is, what are your thoughts on Adnan Syed? And a lot of people don't know Adnan Syed. And that got like 5 million downloads.
Right. You're right. I wish there was an easier and proficient way to make everyone aware.
Yeah, you're right. And that's what we're trying to do with this podcast. So share it with all your friends.
Good one, Melissa.
Hey, I try.
Absolutely.
All right, guys. Enjoy the episode. We will, like I said, just because there won't be a full-length episode doesn't mean there won't be something else on your feed. But have a wonderful new year, and we'll be back in 2021.
Yay! I love it. Have a great rest of your year, everyone. See you next year.
See you next year.
Bye. Bye. For more information about this case and other cases we've covered, visit our website at www.downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Follow us and interact with us on social media. On Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, we are Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast. You can also reach out to us via email at theories@downtherabbitholespodcast.com.
Down the Rabbit Holes Podcast is a 2002 production written, hosted, and developed by Amy Lamar and Melissa Benitez. Music by Kevin Wyman. Audio production by Amy Lamar.